How does the attendance reflect what we're learning?
That people think they can get away with things,
and they did everything that they thought was good. Like they did what they wanted.
They did what they wanted. They didn't think that they had to listen. And the period during the Shoftim, when there was a Shofet, they listened. But when there wasn't, they had not internalized it. And that is the essence of the Shoftim. Yes?
You need to come and attack them at lunch.
No, we're going to attack them at a different time. But that's a different problem. But that behavior is exactly what Shoftim is about. And that behavior is what Shoftim comes to address. You know, if people want to learn, they have to learn from what the material is, from the text.
So is that like where the saying, while the cat's away, the mice will play?
That's saying when the cat's away, the mice will play. And the exact same thing happens throughout Shoftim. The Parak Beis that we're at now addresses that issue. When they have a Shofet, when they have an open miracle, they do all of the mitzvahs. And when they don't have a Shofet, they forget to do all of the mitzvahs. Now, it doesn't mean that they didn't do all the mitzvahs. They kept Shabbos, and the Mefarshim are very, very careful in iterating and emphasizing that the period of Shoftim, the Sefer of Shoftim, has another name. You know what the other name is? Of course not. Do you know what the other name is? It's called Sefer Tzaddikim. It's a Sefer about the period of righteous people. But the theme that we see is a continual movement of Vayasu Hara'a B'nei Hashem. They did that which was bad. And bad isn't on an absolute sense, bad is on a relative sense. And bad can be that one person does something wrong and the other people do not rebuke them, as we saw with Achaz, that he was, one person stole, and all of Bnei Yisrael suffered. They lost in battle. So again, that is the thing. So when you see the people empty chairs, that is part of what you need to learn. In Pasuk Zion, in Perek Beis, it says, during the time of Yeshua, they served Hashem. And they served him as long as that generation was alive. In Pasuk Tes, Vayomas Yeshua ben Nun, Eved Hashem. Yeshua is also called an Eved Hashem. The supreme praise of a person is what? Eved. That he's a slave to Hashem. Which means that everything that that person does is done for Kodesh Baruch Hu. And that is the highest statement of success in this world. He died when he was 110. He was buried in his Nachalah in Shevet Ephraim. He received a special part. And as long as the generation that was alive, that saw the miracles, that saw when they came into Israel, the water split, the sun stood still, all of these miracles, the people did not stray. They saw open miracles. One of the conceptualizations of why Mashiach keeps being delayed is that if the Mashiach is delayed, we lose a certain amount of free will. When you see open things, when you see open miracles, it's harder to sin. When you have the integration of mitzvahs, the integration of the relationship between man and God, to be internalized is a difficult concept. And when you see an open miracle, that internalizes your relationship. If you go out to have a war, we talked about the wars that we had in Israel, but when you go out and have a war, if you stand there and all of a sudden you see a lightning bolt hit the enemy, then you understand your place and your relationship to the physical much better than if you go out to have a war and he shoots at you and you shoot at him and you hit and he misses. Well, when you have that kind of thing, you can say, maybe I did it. And your ability to understand is not as great. And we'll see that this is exactly what happens in Shoftim. Up until a certain period of time, the miracles were lightning bolts, or overt miracles. After a certain period of time, the miracles were no longer that. And that occurs up until the period of Gideon, which is he's in the middle of this. Afterwards, the miracles are less obvious. And that occurs also, as we said, in our current time. We can see that, you know, the secular generals would say, we won because of God. There was no way we could have been this. You know, if you've ever been in the army, you know that it's not that efficient. But that's after one day. You'll say, oh, no, actually, it was because of my technical skills and planning and all the things that I did to get the equipment and. And that's exactly what happens here.
When did you say that they stopped seeing the open miracle so much?
The last open miracle was with Gideon. You have after Gideon a period of time that the Shoftim do not have major fighting. With Yiftach, which is the next major fighting, you see that Yiftach is already does not have an open miracle. Okay? Pesach Yud Aleph is the key statement in terms of all of Shoftim. Vayas b'nei Yisrael sarah b'nei Hashem. Period. There's that little wishbone underneath. The wishbone is like a comma when you read the Chumash or the Navi. That's like a comma. That's one thing. And then Vayavdu es Habalim, and they serve the Baal, the idol of the Baal. Or, if we want to, we can translate the Baalim means those that have things. Avodah Zarah during this period of time was what? What is idol worship? Do you really believe that somebody is going to take a pen and worship it as a god? If I gave somebody 4,000 years ago this pen, they would really find it an amazing phenomenon. And they might think that it was supernatural. And they could put it on their, say, above their fireplace or someplace of prominence, and pray to this pen to cure all the ills, even without knowing about the New York Times. Could somebody take any of these objects, a piece of wood, and really believe that that's the thing that created the whole world? Okay, it's a way to connect to God. What does that mean?
Like, Hashem created things. Like, at the beginning, when it all started, wasn't it that Hashem, like, everyone knew that Hashem created the world, he created the sun, he created the moon. And they were like, okay, so why don't we try and connect to that, the sun in the room, which gives us whatever, which gives us sunlight and feeds everything. And then from there, like, connect to certain things, which will then connect to Hashem. Rather than going straight to him, they try and connect to other things. I didn't explain it well.
No, you explained it perfectly well. But in your explanation, there are a lot of correct ideas and a lot of ideas that I think you haven't internalized. That is to say, that is the correct answer. What does it mean? What? You said that Avodah Zarah, and there is one form of Avodah Zarah, and there are other forms, but a form of Avodah Zarah says, roughly, let's take this MP3 player, and we can, let's take a telephone, and we can call God, and I'll tell you what, I'll put this on my fireplace, and I will dive into this, because with this device, this telephone, I can call Kadosh Baruch Hu. And I can speak to him, and he's going to answer better than if I just daven or something like that. That's closer, but the question is, does it still make sense? Do you really believe that in terms of your understanding of what people were doing here?
I don't think it has to make sense. It was like a taiva. It was like a desire that they had. Like people nowadays even have plenty of irrational desires. And the fact is that they just had this pull, and they were a lot smarter than our generation, because they were, you know, so much closer to Mark and Sarah, so obviously they knew it was not a proper way to connect to Hashem.
100% correct. Again, the same questions can be asked. Are you saying that, and there was the taiva for Avodah Zarah then was much greater than now, are components of the taiva. But are you saying that we don't have to worry about idol worship now? Are you saying that the only reason these people did it is because they had they weren't able to control, in Freudian terms, they weren't able to control their id drives for Avodah Zarah, and the id drives then were the primary drive as opposed to the Freudian sexual drive, which defines modern psychology. The primary id drive was then Avodah Zarah. Well, you could say that, but again, it doesn't make, if we concentrate and focus on that, that doesn't necessarily make a lot of sense. I mean, it makes sense, but it doesn't answer sufficiently for us to learn something. What you're saying in part is we don't need to learn anything about Avodah Zarah. All the Naf that talks about Avodah Zarah and all of the commandments that deal with not serving God, applicable for those people. But we're smarter than that, because either we've become smarter or because the Anshei Knesset HaGdola asked the Kodesh Baruch Hu to remove that id drive, and therefore it was removed from the underlying inclinations and motivational drives.
Just building on what she said, if you say that back then that this drive was towards worshiping material objects, I mean, you know, something that they could talk through, but today we still have that drive, it's just not the same, it's a different kind of drive. That, like you said, that drive for idol worship is gone, but now we still have Avodah Zarah, just in a different form, because we do have a tendency towards, you know, like the exciting sexual diversion and things like that. and wealth and power and all those kind of things. So aren't those a form of a vodazar in these times?
Generally, sexual drive, sexual types of issues are not considered drives for a vodazar. There's one of the Mefarshim says that all of vodazara stems from the drive to have sexual promiscuity, and it just is a way of saying, really, it's all right to do whatever you want sexually. But to but sexual promiscuity, ability to do that, is not really an vodazara. It is a satisfaction of a physical need, a physical want, or a physical pleasure, or a physical desire. But it's focused on you as an individual. It's a self-focus. Avodah Zarah has also in it a component of focusing on something other than oneself.
Is it always to Hashem? Is that what Avodah Zarah is? I didn't know.
No, it's not always to Hashem.
Okay.
Isn't it like misguided? Well, I mean, obviously it's misguided, but is it misguided, like trying to give to something when one doesn't feel like first they were doing bad and then they did a vodazara.
She wants to hear you, right?
Sorry.
Is that what you said?
Yeah. So, like in the pasuk, it says first they were doing bad, first in the eyes of Hashem, and then they were. It seems like and then they were doing a vodazara. So it seems like that by doing the bad, it will like lead you to.
That is certainly the correct interpretation of the pasuk. You have a comma. You have first they did bad. The simple explanation of bad is that they failed to understand their successes and their life, their everyday tranquility, their everyday peace and success and food and everyday life comes from a Kodesh Baruch. And once they fail to understand that adequately, then they come to Avodah Zarah. That's why there is a stop, and it's two separate stages and components. But we still need to understand a little bit better the Avodah Zarah.
God, but when you're even more so, when you're so farther away from Him, I think maybe it's at that point when they kind of lose sight that they know that there's something out there, but they don't really know what, and so they try and connect to different aspects. I can't explain that. Maybe they're different aspects of God, like there's giving and there's this and there's that. So some people go for all these idols that are all peace and love and whatever. They try
because
they know there's something out there, but they don't know what, so they try and connect
with
through something.
Well, I think we're going to stop. We do need to finish the introduction, but I do want to talk about, again, generally, what a shofet is, and what a melech is, and what a president is, and what a prime minister is. So we're going to stop for a moment. You need to answer the question. And you need to answer the question because it is a crucial question in life. And it defines what that is. Let me give you some possible directions. In Avodah Zarah, though, you have a component that it's on your mantle. It's in your thing. Other people don't necessarily have it. Another possible direction is, according to the Medrash, when one dies, they're asked three questions. The first three questions, they're asked many more questions. But the first question is, were you honest in business? The next question is,
did you wait for Mashiach?
That's the third question. Those two questions, you can find out the third. I once had a principal that said, if you leave things incomplete, that causes the person to learn them better. I like that principle. It begins with a Z and it's some German word, but it's a nice principle. You should find out the third one. And you should ask, why are those questions, those crucial questions? And that is the beginning of a start of thinking about Avodah Zarah. You can ask about other religions now. Christianity is considered to have components of Avodah Zarah by most poskim. There is a machlokas. The Muslim religion is not considered to be Avodah Zarah. Islam is not considered to be Avodah Zarah. Why and what are those differences? And if we see in Shoftim that when the cat's away, the mice play, what about now? Are we going to completely accept the idea that that it was removed, or do we say that it was modified and that certain kinds of Avodah Zarah were removed, but that the underlying principle of straying from HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not? So those are possible directions. We talked about the court system a little bit. We'll come back to that. I'd like to focus on the start of the, before we get to the Israeli system, I'd like to focus on the Shofet and the Melech. The Shofet is what? Shofet is primarily a judge. That's why he's called a Shofet. And he has certain authority to lead, including to fight wars. The Shofet, though, is bound by law, and it's a strict law. The ability to deviate in halacha is limited. The ability to paskin in understanding is follows certain pre-described parameters. We have rabbinical decrees, we have gezerot, but they can only be made by a certain level of authority. And they can only work in a certain way if the kahal, if the population accept them. A shofet has that complete limitation. There's other things that he could marry more than 18 wives. He could be a multi-billionaire. A king cannot. A king has more pomp and glory, and it's inherited. The job is inherited, which means that there's a certain kind of stature that's not based on individual success. It's based on who you are. And that is a difference in kind. The king can also impose certain kinds of taxes. And the king can make gzeros. The king can make rules about what people can do and cannot do. Both, if you rebel against them, are punishable by death. And we'll see that there's times when the Shoftim use that, limited. And we'll see with the kings that is one of the underlying themes of many of these stories of the kings. The concept of a king was carried over or was independently derived. Well, it wasn't carried over. It was independently derived. We see that the people in the time of Yeshua, the time of Paro, were kings. Paro was a king that was an absolute monarch. The people believed that he was God, which means, for example, that Paro didn't let the people know that he had to go to the bathroom. He could order population killed. could order all the Jewish boys, babies thrown into the river. He could take a bath in blood. He could do whatever he wanted. And that was the motto of the king. Now, how did that develop? It's important to really understand that. And that development in terms of the understanding of Avodah Zarah is also useful because it defines the person's belief that they are supreme to God. As history develops, we have a phenomena called the people being unhappy and rebelling. And they get pushed too far, and the king gets killed. And we have, in England, the Magna Carta, which defines the rights of the people. And then we have a revolution in France in which they kill the king and then make somebody else the king, or empire, or whatever. But they don't have a set of laws, and they still have the ability to do pretty much whatever they want as long as they have the ability to beat the next guy up. And then you have the American Revolution, which says that the people have the right and the king doesn't have the right. And they set up a system that has independent controls of the power of the president. But it has powers that are granted to the people, to the legislative branch. And it set up a body called the Constitution, or a law body that said these laws are that which need to be kept. And through a variety of sociological reasons, the rest of the world moved to a structure like that. But the European governments moved to have a structure of having the executive not being elected directly by the people, but being elected by the legislative body. So they have a structure in which you have a prime minister. And that person's power is limited to a certain degree by having to have his authority controlled. In Israel, prime minister, the Israeli governmental system is modeled after the European system, primarily because why? Is anybody awake here? We were a British colony. So when we had the British leave, the same basic system was set up, in which you have a legislative and you have a court, because you have to have courts, and you have to have an executive. So they set up a prime minister. But in the British system, you have a queen, who is the head of government, maybe. Oh, she's not really. What?
She doesn't do anything in terms of law. She just has to stamp.
She doesn't do anything in terms of anything. But, whatever. But that was the system that we needed to adopt. So they adopted the system and they made a president. Now, in part, they made the president also because they had this person that they didn't want to be a prime minister, but they couldn't just say he didn't have a job. So they made him the queen. Or the king, then. Well, that's... yes. They made him the president. And the president, then, does not have a lot of authority. But They gave him some of the stamping authority that the Queen has. And that he can stamp off on pardons. He has to stamp off on pardons. He has to stamp off on some other things. And he gets to go to other countries and have big parties held. And because, again, we don't define exactly what the rules are, we allow people to make their jobs into what they wish it to be. But the system then is, the question is, what is the better system? Is it better to have a shofet who reaches the his place by being a technical expert or a theocrat or excels in understanding one body? Is it better to have a king who has limitations? The king's basic role is to judge also. We'll see that David and certainly Shlomo. Shlomo is, the story of Shlomo's wisdom is personified by the case where he's a judge, because that was one of the things that he did most of the time. He also built. And that's a difference between the judge. The judge can help direct and can advise, but he can't raise the taxes to build. Is the better system an American president who's elected directly? Is the better system a system in which the legislature elects somebody, because that modifies the people's irrationality, where they can be manipulated by the press and those things? So the question is the better system. We'll go back and again go through this again. The final body that we want to mention is the legislature. In the period of Jewish law, period of the Shoftim, the period of the Malchus, there is no legislature. There is no body that legislates law, because halacha is given by a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Having said that, there are situations in which we need to have things taken care of. For example, in Jewish law, in order to find a murderer guilty and impose the capital punishment on them, you have to have witnesses that actually see the act. There is no such thing as circumstantial evidence. You also have in Jewish law a concept that if the court, and the court for capital offenses is 23, all 23 judges agree the person is guilty, you let the person go. Because if there's no there must be some rationale that would say that the person did this for good cause. And if they can't find it, if 23 judges can't find it, then something is wrong. But that's good only when you have a moral society. Once you get to a place where either somebody figures that out or wants to violate it, and again, that's crucial to understanding Shoftim, because it wouldn't work unless there were a moral society. The societal codes and laws would not work. The court says we can't decide capital punishment, but you do need to have some method of taking care and protecting society. So the court does have some latitude in terms of certain kinds of things that are quasi-legislative. But their latitude is extremely limited. The idea of the zakenim, the idea of the elders, as being a body that needs approved to go out to war, is there. but there is no legislative action. The advise and consent concept was there, but the advise and consent concept was there as being one of three or four different components that had to advise and consent. So in Shoftim, there is no legislature. In time of the Malachim, there is no legislature.